went to Washington, Missouri. I went through the rest of grade school and high school there, and then went to a little Methodist school called Central College at Fayette, Missouri for 2 years, and then the University of Missouri my third year, and law school. At that time, you had to have 3 years of undergraduate work to get into law school. After that, I married while I was in law school, and then went to Colorado after the war for 5 years. I was divorced there. Married Orlando in 1952. He was in the Air Force, and that took us to Houston, Texas. I didn't try to get admitted there because I had no earthly desire to stay in Texas. And they kept telling him, you know, that it was a one-year assignment and it would just be a few months more. And it turned into 3 years that we were there, and then he was transferred up here to Eielson. And we've been here ever since. He got out after a couple of years and started teaching at the university. Went back to Columbia and got his PhD.
What year did you come up to Alaska?
55.
And did you take the bar that year?
No, we got here in August, and you had to have been in the state, in the territory then, for 90 days, and I missed it by about 3 weeks, so I couldn't. They offered it once a year, so I took it the next year, 56.
And what was the bar exam like?
Well, it was funny. I've forgotten now which subjects, but it's between agency and corporations. On one category or the other, there were 7 questions, and on the other, there were none. It wasn't too different from the Missouri and the Colorado bar exams, except that it was oddly lopsided. And I didn't know who was grading the papers. It was done by members of the local bar, and it turned out that one of the graders was the man for whom I was then typewriter banging, waiting to pass the bar. Not that it would have, if I had not done adequately, it wouldn't have done a bit of good with him. He had flunked me as ruthlessly as anybody else.
Who was that?
Walter Scudlow. So he's somebody else you should talk to.
They say he's out in
India right now. Oh, he is? Oh.
So when you passed the bar exam, was that 1956, the same year? So I graded it. Who were the board of governors, the board of examiners?
Remember, Ed Davis was one, and Scudlow was one, and I can't remember who the third one was. I don't remember.
And when you passed the bar, was there an admitting? Who did the
No. Chuck Clasby was either a member of the Board of Governors or the president of the Bar Association, I've forgotten which. And I'd been notified that I passed, and of course was delighted, because it had been quite a while since I'd taken a bar exam, and kind of waited for something to happen. And finally I said to him, "When do I get sworn in?" And he said, "Do you want to go over this afternoon?" And I said, "Sure." So we went over that afternoon, and I got sworn in.
Were you the only one taking it in Fairbanks?
No, Yancey James did too, and it was a few days after that that Yancey said to me, "When do we get sworn in?" and I said, "Well, I already have been. Do you want me to go with you to court and move for your admission?" And so we did, and
Was Brendan Forbes suggesting? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Did you know, was Pratt before Forbes?
He was before Forbes, but he had been off the bench for a year or so when I got here. I think that he moved to someplace in Arizona from here, mm-hmm. And he was already gone. His daughters are still here.
What about Brendan Forbes? What was he like?
I liked him, and I thought he was a good judge, and there was an awful lot of griping and complaining about him, and without having known his predecessor, it was kind of hard for me to figure whether the griping was justified, but I thought he was fine.
But they compared him to Heff, was there?
No, they would have been to Pratt, I suppose,
mm-hmm.
And I didn't know Pratt. And then I think the thing was complicated because it was just about that time that they really started using the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure seriously. And I think before that, they'd been using maybe State of Oregon or State of Washington civil rules. They shouldn't have been, but they were. Mm-hmm. And that's a big change. So that it was having to get used to something new, and here was the guy that was making me do it.
Was there any, did the legislature say they had to use the federal rules, or did the bar, or what made them switch?
No, federal statute just says that that these are the rules under which federal courts shall operate, and the district court for the territory of Alaska was a federal court.
When did they first start doing it? What made them change?
I expect, well, you see, Congress adopted for Alaska the laws of the state of Oregon.
Yeah.
And I suppose that that's what brought, I think that it brought Oregon procedure along with it.
Mm-hmm. So they just never, until 1956, mm-hmm. they decided.
And here is this new judge who comes in from North or South Dakota. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what their procedure was, but I assume that by then he knew something of the federal rules. And figured, why should I learn Washington or Oregon procedure? Why not do what ought to be done anyway?
Yeah. Who were the lawyers here when you first came?
Mm. Well, Chuck Clasby, of course, and Walter Scudlow, Warren Taylor, Bob McNeely, E.P. McCarran, Bill Bogus, Bill Taylor, Eugene Miller. Was already here, yeah, sure. Bob Parrish. How many have I got?
Eight.
Oh, I'm short. Sherman Noyes was in the country. He wasn't in Fairbanks at that time. I think he was someplace down in Tok. But later on he came back, and he had been admitted long before I was. Morris Johnson. Fred Crane was over in Kotzebue, and he had been suspended. And then sometime later, he was readmitted and came over to Fairbanks. Mm-hmm. But he wasn't here then. So Rudy's was in Juneau. Oh, Charlie Cole. And Dick was here, and I'm trying to remember, there was well, that's one of the good old stories. Charlie forgot to mail Dick's application to take the bar exam, and Dick was delayed a year in taking it. But I can't tell you for sure what year that was. I think it wound up that Dick was admitted a year after I was. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure. It could have been 2 years. At any rate, not at the same time as, and I'm pretty sure he had not been admitted before me.
What were the big business interests in town at the time?
Oh, Wing, Alaska Airlines, First National Bank, and the Alaska National Bank of the North, which was then the Bank of Fairbanks. It was a state bank, or territorial. Usabelli Coal Company, NC Company. Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Who represented the big interests?
Chuck Clasby, a lot of them.
He
represented NC, and he represented Ween, and he represented First National.
Was Collins was here when you came?
Yes, he'd already retired.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which ones did Clasby represent?
Usabelli. Did I say Usabelli?
Did he represent any of the banks?
First National.
Who represented the other ones?
Oh, let's see. Mm. I just can't remember. The bankers who were here then, I remember a fellow named Cartwright, and what's his name, Bailey, was here then, but I can't remember who did their legal work.
They were people from Fairbanks. So
oh, I'm sure so, because it was then Bank of Fairbanks, and it was very much a local bank.
Mm-hmm. Were there any outside counsel in Fairbanks, people from Seattle coming up?
Oh, yes, even way back then. I'm remembering a case that had to do with a construction job out on Eielson. And that was while we were still living at Eielson, so it was before the summer of 57. And they brought a fellow up from Seattle whose name was Stuart Oles. And there was always a good deal of resentment against the foreigners coming in.
What were the companies most likely to have outside counsel come up?
Well, that was a building contractor. Could have been MK. I'm just not sure. It was, and I am sure that there was involved an insurance company which had provided construction bonding, and then the suit actually was on the contractor's bond. But I don't remember what insurance company. USF&G, I think, maybe.
What did most of these people handle? What kind of law were they practicing when you first came out?
With the exception of Parrish, I'd say everybody was in general practice. Some people did more criminal work than others. Collins and Clasby just did no criminal work at all. Mm-hmm. But Parrish was the only person who specialized in personal injury cases. There just wasn't anybody else who did that degree or kind of specialization.
What about Warren Taylor?
Well, if I don't really want to get sued by Bill Taylor for having slandered or libeled his papa.
Okay,
well, can I tell you, not for repetition, one of the funnier stories about him? At least it was always funny to me.
We can edit the tape. I mean, we can make the tape not available. I can turn off the tape. Which
do you go ahead and turn it off.
Making a big problem in Fairbanks, I know in Anchorage they had a lot of trial attorneys were having problems with liquor when they carried for example.
Yeah. George Yeager did here.
Yeah.
And George, that's another one to add to your list because George was here before I was. And Ted Stevens.
Oh, I didn't know
him. Uh-huh. Briefly, he went to Washington to work for the Department of the Interior.
Oh,
not
you
long
meant
after that.
I thought you meant one of the drinkers.
Oh, no, 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 no. Another lawyer to add to the list. No. 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 Not Ted.
It's a well kept secret.
Yeah, no.
He's in the DA's office?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well-deserved.
Oh, yes. He was going to run all of the prostitutes out of Fairbanks, completely out. There wasn't going to be one left. I don't think there's a town like that anywhere in the country. Certainly he wasn't able to accomplish it, but it made good press.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Was he very political in his...
Yeah. I knew about him not so much from Ted as from Chuck Clasby because he had worked for Clasby briefly. And Clasby said that the dream of his life is to be a U.S. senator. And I've often thought it'd be fun to talk to Ted and find out whether the realization of the dream matched the dream itself.
What did he do for Chuck Clasby?
Oh, just general practice, you know, assistance, the same kind of thing that I did when I came along a year or two later.
Yeah. What kind of work were you doing when you first started with Class B?
Everything under the sun.
Was Scudlow there too?
Yeah.
But Class B was Collins Class B.
And Scudlow.
When you say everything under the sun, what do you mean?
Oh, wills, deeds, contracts. Originally, not much litigation, but later on, it came to be that most of what I was doing was personal injury defense work.
Were there any other women lawyers in town?
In the DA's office, there was a woman whose name was Paula Tennant, but I don't think she was admitted in Alaska. And I don't think she was here when I first came. I think she came here a year or so afterwards and was here for maybe a couple of years and then left.
Did you find any resistance in the community to a woman? Or first in the community and then among lawyers?
Among lawyers, yes. Nothing that I could really complain about until I had done enough work for the bar that I thought it was time that I got to be a member of the Board of Governors. And I put in my name, and one friend said very bluntly, you know, it's too bad, you deserve it. However, things go on at Board of Governors meetings that you have no business knowing anything about and certainly not taking part in. He meant they partied board meetings. It was actually what, for himself, he was speaking in big brotherly fashion. He didn't mean to be patronizing or condescending or anything of that sort. It was just that I was a nice girl who didn't belong. It annoyed me.
Yeah, how do you get along and stuff like that? How do you get by when there's that kind of attitude?
You just ignore it. One of the things that didn't happen here in Fairbanks happened back in Colorado when I was practicing there. There was a case in which our client was a man who owned a dog. And the defendant was a neighboring rancher at whose place the dog showed up and wouldn't get him back. And besides, the two of them didn't like each other anyway. So we had a trial over whether that really was the dog that our client thought it was or some other dog, including bringing the dog into the courtroom and letting him go to who called him. He went to the right one. Well, the judge back there in Colorado was somebody that I really liked and admired. And he told me a little bit later that the loser in that case had come in griping about that damn woman. See, I was opposing counsel. Yeah, that damn woman. And then it wasn't too long after that that man came into my office wanting something done. And it was awfully hard to keep a straight face.
Why did he come to you? Because you've done a good job. Yeah. How long did you practice in Colorado?
5 years.
What kind of work?
Again, just general small town practice, Steamboat Springs.
Did you have to start all over when you got to Alaska?
Yeah, because I wasn't admitted here and I had to get admitted. And, I remember writing very confidently on the bar exam that Alaska had a guest rider statute that, bars the guest rider from suing the driver for negligence. Alaska didn't. Missouri did, but Alaska didn't.
You're creating new law.
Yes.
Did Chuck Classby or Walter Scudlow, who you've been doing work for, did they take into account that you'd already been practicing in Colorado? Did they?
I think so. There's just a difference between the kinds of things that people can do who've been doing it for a while and what you can do when you're just absolutely fresh out of law school.
Yeah. Go
ahead. Well, if things are as they used to be, you come out of law school utterly unprepared for the general office work of a law office. You can research a problem, you can write a brief, But you can't do just the plain, ordinary things that people wandering off the street want advice about or want paperwork for.
How long does it take to learn that?
I don't know. I really don't know.
How many people were in the office when you were practicing?
Three of them.
Did they ever want to expand? They were the biggest firm here, weren't they?
Yeah, I guess so, because when I first got here, McNeely was by himself. Warren Taylor may have had a bigger shop, because I can't remember when people were there, but Bill Bogus was there, and Gene Miller was there, and Bill Taylor, and Warren. And it may be that they didn't overlap so that there was no time when all four of them were there. I don't remember.
Tell me about Gene Miller. Why did you study that?
Well, because my mother, who was born in 1897 and was a young woman when the suffrage amendment to the U.S. Constitution was passed, must surely have absorbed during her youth a lot of talk about women ought to be able to do what they want to do. And so Mama said, do whatever you want to do that you're able to do reasonably well. And that was enough encouragement. But when I was a kid, high school class, I don't remember if it was history or civics or what, but we went over to the county courthouse and listened to a case which was being tried. And it had something to do with the violation of a contract for the construction of a school. I was fascinated. The other kids were just bored stiff. But I didn't want to quit and go home. That was fun.
Were there any lawyers in your family?
I had an uncle who was a lawyer, except that I only met him once in my life. He was a lot older than my dad was. And, he must have died probably about the time I was in law school, and I only had seen him once.
Were there people
not close.
People who gave you encouragement besides your mother to pursue law?
Not really. At the University of Missouri, well, first of all, I think a lot of them thought this is a reasonably bright kid, and if she thinks she wants to do it, it's not, this undergraduate stuff that she's taking isn't going to hurt her at all. And then when I got to the University of Missouri, and assigned advisors. Well, what I got was the head of the psychology department. And he looked at my transcript, and he saw that the thing said pre-law. And he said, why are you here in my office? And I said, I have no idea. They said I should come to you for guidance, so here I am. And he laughed. And he said, well, this is just silly. I'll call the dean of the law school and you go over there and talk to him. And he did, and the dean was very pleasant and helpful. And,
were there women in your law class?
One other.
One. What year was this?
Started in 1941, finished in 44. And the University of Missouri class of 44 consisted of two. And you can say that I was either second in my class or the bottom half of the class.
And there was only one woman, and there were two?
The two of us were left, and everybody else had gone to war. There were a few other students left in the law school, but I think the whole student body by 1944 was probably down to about 20 people.
Wow. You were married then?
Yeah.
So you didn't look for a law job, or did you look for a law job right away?
No.
What about you said there was one other woman? Did she find a law job right away? Have you kept in touch? Or
no. I know that she married one of the guys who was in the class behind ours. Don't remember, she was from Chillicothe, and I don't remember whether he was or not, but it's my recollection that they went back there to live and practice together.
That's in Missouri.
But that's all I remember.
So your first law job was in Colorado, is that?
Mm-hmm.
For 5 years, then you moved to Texas, and no law.
No. Well, I worked in a law office, but as a secretary.
Didn't that bother you after you did?
Yeah. It did.
Did you ever feel that you could have probably done this better?
Yes. I did.
Did you ever give them advice? I tried
not to, but every now and then something would pop out, and sometimes it was the right thing that popped out. And then Texas law is really, especially property law, is very, very different from Missouri or Colorado, you want. It's a community property state, and they are not. And then there was an awful lot of oil stuff, and I had no experience or education having to do with oil. And then towards the end of the time I was there, I went to work for one of the partners who didn't really practice law to speak of. What he was really doing was running a savings and loan association and was involved in a lot of other business ventures. And so what I did was kind of secretarial, administrative assistant, do the books as far as I could go with them, and you know, just an assortment of things.
Did you learn any oil and gas law while you were there?
Oh, probably a little bit, but even so, the situation here is so very different from what it is there, because the land on which the oil wells is drilled is all privately owned. Mm-hmm. And here, none of it's privately owned. And what they were dealing with generally was the rights of the landowners, sometimes contracts for, you know, drilling contracts. But then I was on the bench by the time that kind of stuff started being dealt with here.
When did you go on the bench?
67.
And you spent the whole time before that with did you know E.B. Collins at all?
Oh, I met him. He came into the office to visit fairly often.
Okay.
He was the dearest old man I have ever known in my life. Courtly and gallant and just lovely. Oh, he was something.
Did he give clients to Clasby, or Clasby's clients from Collins' old practice? How did it work?
I expect so. I think that he bought Mr. Collins out. I think that's what happened. And that was retirement money for Mr. Collins. I don't know whether they lived down at Harding Lake for a number of years, and then wound up in the Pioneers' home. And then eventually he died.
Mm-hmm. With Collins, can you describe Collins to me? Not Collins, but Clasby, Chuck Clasby. What was his practice like when you first got in, and what was he like to work for?
Oh, very nice man to work for. Mm-hmm. Just as nice as he could be. The only trouble with him was he wouldn't gossip. Just almost never. The story I told you about Warren Taylor, that's one of the few times that I can remember when he ever really spoke badly of anybody. And knowing gossipy things about the people that you're dealing with is often very helpful, and he just wouldn't.
Yeah. He'd been here for a long time now, since about 37.
Yeah, sometime in the 30s anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did he ever tell you about how Fairbanks had been changing, or how his practice had changed, or anything like that?
Oh, he talked about the first year or two that he was here. He worked pearl diving in the Model Cafe, and he had a job in the dishwashing.
Oh.
Didn't you know that's pearl diving? Yes. And he had a job as an usher at the theater. I don't remember, but other odd jobs, because there just wasn't enough practice to feed him.
Yeah.
And then it got better.
When did he start with Collins?
I don't know that. I don't know. Mr. Collins had been in the legislature, you know, for many, many years. And I just don't remember whether he first went to work for Mr. Collins, or whether he hung out his shingle himself. And then later they went together, I don't know.
Yeah.
I must surely have known once, but I don't anymore.
What about Walter Scudnell? When did he go with First Federal, and what was he like?
I enjoyed him. A lot of people didn't. He got here in about 1950, I think. Mm-hmm. our office was on the top floor of the Polaris building. And I think it was in 58 that we moved to the First National Bank building. And I think that was when Walter left. Walter didn't go with us on the move, and so I think that that must have been when First Fed was established.
So did he establish First Fed? Mm-hmm. Was he one of the original staff? Was Class B on it too? No. Was your firm at all? Mm-hmm. It was just he and Angela. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. had he just decided that that was enough firm practice and now he wanted to?
Yeah, I think so. He was working for Fannie Mae, I think it was, when he first came here. That's what brought him up here. And then he stayed. But the legal work that he'd done really had more to do with banking than with other things. And he was a banker at heart.
What about E.P. McCarran? What kind of practice did he have?
Another one with general practice. Everybody did. There just wasn't specialization.
Except for Bob. Mm-hmm. What kind of person was he? What kind of...
He was older than I. I didn't really know him awfully well. Trying to remember when it was that he retired and they left. I can't even remember that. They used to live out on the Badger Road, I remember.
Ralph Berger? Was he practicing up here? Was he
yes. He was practicing here. I don't remember whether... He was Attorney General after that. Must have been.
Might have been before, too. Because J. Gerald Williams was the last Attorney General. He was Attorney General in 53 and 60.
Was he for that long?
Yeah.
Okay, well, then Ralph must have been before I got here. But he was practicing law. I think he was in the legislature, too, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, in those years, I think.
Could have been the Constitutional Convention.
Yeah, I'm sure he was. And then he went. Then he was elected delegate. Mm-hmm.
But he had a practice.
Oh, yes.
Did he associate with anybody else here?
Don't think so. As I remember, he was by himself. I'm not absolutely certain of that.
So the only associations were the Class B one and the Taylor one and McNeely and Meredith later.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
At statehood, wasn't there a push to have bigger firms to capture business? Was there that sort of an effort to expand law firms?
Later there was, but not in the early years.
Did the law firms expand, did they?
Oh, well, sure. McNeely did. There was Murdy's and Henry Camerell and Grace. Let's see, Rice Hoppner. Julian practiced by himself after he was admitted, and I think, I don't remember that he associated with anybody until Lloyd Hoppner came in. And I'm almost certain that I was already on the bench, so it would have been late 60s, early 70s when Lloyd came.
Was there any native law? Were natives coming to lawyers and asking for help at all in the early years?
Oh, occasionally. I remember one that I had who had a homestead claim on the road between here and Nana. And when he went into the BLM and asked for homestead application forms, they gave him just plain garden variety homestead application forms, you know, that require that you clear so many acres and build a house of thus and such a size. And after so many years, it's yours. Well, the Native Allotment Act provided simply that if you had used the land over some period of time for hunting, trapping, whatever, if that was all it took, you didn't have to have a house, you didn't have to have anything. It was just kind of automatic. Well, the girl at the desk didn't know they were different and had just given him the wrong forms. And then he went in to pester him after quite a while, several years. You know, how come nothing's ever happened to this? Well, you haven't proved up. He didn't know what they were talking about. We got that one straightened out. That's about the only one I remember.
Were there any other lawyers who dealt with natives who had any kind of native practice?
Well, there wasn't a public defender. And there must have been some court appointments to represent natives, but I really don't know who took the appointments, who did the work. They would have been largely criminal, and with our not doing criminal work, we were kind of blind to it.
How did you get out of getting criminal appointments?
I don't know. I just don't know.
Someone speaking to the judges here.
Oh, I remember another one. There was a condemnation of land down the highway for widening the Richardson. And there was a native allotment down there that they wanted to take part of.
Fred Crane. Can you tell me about Fred Crane?
Oh, Fred was funny. He had apparently had a lot of trouble with liquor in the earlier days. I don't think that he was drinking during the years that he was practicing in Fairbanks. If he was, I didn't know it. Before I was on the district court, he had kind of a running battle going on with Judge Connolly. He just didn't show up when he was supposed to. And that does get aggravating to a judge. It just does. And there came the day when there was some kind of pretrial hearing in the old courthouse post office. And Fred was on one side and I was on the other. And I think it was Rabinowitz again told us to go back out of the courtroom and confer and report back to him on the result of our settlement efforts. So we went across the street to my office, and Fred and I jawed for a while, and we did settle it. And then we went on to lunch. Everybody used to meet at the model. There was a big table that they set aside for lawyers. Later became Sam's Cafe, and it was at that time Sam's Cafe. And ate lunch, and then somebody came in to get Fred. It seemed that Judge Connolly had issued a warrant. And then there was, or maybe just a show cause order, why he shouldn't be held in contempt. And there was a hearing on it. Now that had to be after statehood, because the district court was somewhere along 2nd Avenue, upstairs over something. And I got to testify that we were doing what another court had told us to do, and got Fred off the hook. I'm sure that there were many times when he didn't deserve to get off the hook.
When you first got here, what was Fairbanks like? What was the city like?
Well, Cushman was paved from Airport Road down to the bridge. But the bridge was not the present bridge, it was the old bridge. That was, as I remember, cars went across it one at a time, but I may be mistaken. It may have been wide enough to accommodate two cars. And there was the most monstrous chuck hole at the where the pavement began out at Airport Cushman. I think the Wendell Street Bridge was already here, but I'm not sure about that. I know that the University Avenue one was not. Airport Road wasn't paved, College Road wasn't paved.
Mm-hmm. A lot different from Texas. I mean.
Oh, yes, but I was gleeful about coming up here.
Why?
Houston, Texas had every disadvantage of every tiny little town. That is, its population consisted almost exclusively of Hicks and Roofs. And it had every disadvantage of every big city, you know, milling people, noise, dirt, so on. And none of the advantages of either, and an abominable climate. Other than that, it was a pretty nice place.
What do you like about Fairbanks?
Oh, the climate. I like the hills. I've enjoyed the practice here. I suppose that you know, any place where you go for a really long time, you tend to get accustomed to and like.
Did you have problems in the community being accepted as women? You talked about the lawyer, the board of governors, but in the community, did they accept a woman lawyer if they came into your office?
Yeah. I didn't have. I remember when I took the bar exam, I put in my application, and Chuck was, as I said, at that time either a member of the board or the president, and Pete Calamaritis, who died, you know, in an airplane crash just a couple years ago, was also a member, and there was the question then of residency. They said that as long as I lived on Eielson and my husband was an Air Force captain, how could I be a resident of here? Well, he had lived in Wyoming before going back into the Air Force. I was living in Colorado. I'd never lived in Wyoming. We went to Texas, where, by God, neither of us established residency, and we're now here. Well, essentially, that's just what I told him. Here is where I am and intend to stay. And Chuck came home from the board meeting saying they're going to let you take the bar exam, and I told them thus and so. And I can't remember what it was that he told them. Whatever it was flat dead wrong, but it persuaded them that I ought to be permitted to take the bar exam. And Chuck would not, he wasn't lying to them. He thought he was telling them the true facts, only he wasn't, whatever it was. I wish I could remember. But his biggest opposition was Pete.
Yeah.
And he, Chuck said that Pete didn't want me to take the bar because I was a woman. No place for a woman. But that was his real reason. Uh-huh. And that he was using the residency thing as an excuse.
Did Pete Calamaritis try to keep people out of the bar, not just women, other lawyers?
I don't know. I have no idea.
What do people in Fairbanks think about lawyers?
I'd say about the same as they do now.
You think they've never changed in their attitude toward lawyers?
Mm-mm.
What does it always
mean? Oh, that we're all a bunch of Shylocks and so on. All except my lawyer.
Yeah. Why?
I don't know.